Have you ever wondered why having God in your life is so important? Maybe you have looked around at all of the godless people around in the world who seem to really enjoy life. We read in the scriptures of one who tried life without God. And he wrote about it for our benefit. This one I'm talking about is a fellow named Solomon. He wrote as the preacher in the book of Ecclesiastes. Now notice his qualifications to speak. We read in Ecclesiastes 1:12, I, the preacher, was king over Israel in Jerusalem. And then in Ecclesiastes chapter 1:16, I communed with my heart saying, look, I have attained greatness. I have gained more wisdom than all who were before me in Jerusalem. My heart has understood great wisdom and knowledge. And then in Ecclesiastes 2 and verse 10, whatever my eyes desired, I did not keep from them. I did not withhold my heart from any pleasure, for my heart rejoiced in all my labor. And this was my reward from all my labor. Now, if anyone was ever equipped to explore the things that this world had to offer, I think Solomon was a good example. With such few limitations, there was not anything that he could not experience in the world. But notice, he tried to find every form of pleasure that this world could afford. In verse 13, Ecclesiastes 1, he says, I set my heart to seek and search out by wisdom concerning all that is done under heaven. Now, the words search out come from a word which means careful examination. It means that the writer is diligent and will leave no stone unturned. And then he says in verse 17, I set my heart. This indicates the earnestness and energy that Solomon put forth. He threw the whole of his intellect and his intellectual powers into this pursuit. It was indeed no half-hearted endeavor. But note here in verse 17 that he examined both sides and considered the irrational view to find wisdom and madness. What did he find? Really? Well, Ecclesiastes chapter 1, verses 2 and 3 tell us he found vanity of vanities. Read with me, if you will, from Ecclesiastes chapter 1 and verse 2. Vanity of vanities, says the preacher, vanity of vanities. All is vanity. What profit has a man from his labor which he toils under the, from the labor in which he toils under the sun. The word vanity comes from a Hebrew word that means emptiness. Figuratively, it is something transitory and unsatisfactory. One commentator said that it is a wisp of vapor A puff of wind. A mere breath. Nothing you could get your hands on. It is the nearest thing to zero. Now notice he asks here in Ecclesiastes 1 and verse 3, what profit has a man from all his labor in which he toils under the sun? Now I want you to remember that this is not a question asked by a lazy man trying to get out of working. No way. Solomon was a worker. In fact, Ecclesiastes chapter 2 and verse 4, he says, I made my works great. I built myself houses. I planted myself vineyards. But where is it that he found that all was vanity? Well, he says, under the sun. Under the sun. It's clear that the realm in which all is vanity is a place that we should be familiar with. And this phrase appears some 30 times in the book of Ecclesiastes. One commentator said of this that the use of this phrase is equivalent to drawing a horizontal line between earthly and heavenly realities and leaving out of consideration all that is above the line. Well, this is not a statement, by the way, that can be construed as being of depression or of despair. Vanity of vanities is the truth concerning all the nature of the world and earthly things. Life based on earthly desires and goals and ambitions and a view of life that rises no farther than man himself is doomed to meaningless frustration. Without God, life is, let's see here. No. Okay. Life is like a, there it is. Without God, life is like a treadmill. I knew it was there somewhere. Like a treadmill. Ecclesiastes 1 verse 4, one generation passes away and another generation comes, but the earth abides forever. One generation is always going and another is always coming. Surely this stresses the temporary nature of man. But Solomon gives examples of this treadmill of life. In verses 5 through 7 of Ecclesiastes chapter 1. Ecclesiastes 1 verses 5 through 7. The sun also rises and the sun goes down and hastens to the place where it arose. The wind goes toward the south and turns around to the north. The wind whirls about continually and comes again on its circuit. All the rivers run into the sea, yet the sea is not full. To the place from which rivers come, there they return again. Now of this, Solomon observes in Ecclesiastes 1 and verse 8 that all things are full of labor. The word is translated weariness in the American Standard Version. But the word itself means to be tired, hence tiresome, or full of labor, or weary. We work all day. We get tired. We rest. And then what do? We work all day. Anybody know anything about that? No, I'm sure that's foreign to us. But then someday, you're too sick or too old to work, and you sit down and you die. Now, before you get too low on that, this is what it's like to be without God. Without God, that's all there is to it. That's all there is to it. In verse 8 of chapter 1, Solomon observes, "The eye is not satisfied with seeing, nor the ear filled with hearing. Just as the oceans are never full, man's senses are never satisfied." But then, in Ecclesiastes chapter 1 and verse 9, he says, "That which has been is what will be, and that which is done is what will be done, and there is nothing new under the sun." Well, we've noticed this in a practical sense in our own lives and the lives around us, that there is nothing new under the sun. Why would he say such a thing? Why is it that there is nothing new under the sun? Simple reason. History repeats itself. Oh, we got different actors and different names, but they're still doing the same things. Since both man and the world are caught up in the same cycle, so it is that man's history comes around. In further observation of this, in Ecclesiastes 1, verses 10 and 11, Solomon says, "Is there anything of which it may be said, 'See, this is new'? Has already been in ancient times before us. There is no remembrance of former things, nor will there be any remembrance of things that are to come by those who will come after us." There's one basic reason why the same things happen generation after generation. You know what the basic reason is? Man has a short memory. Man has a short memory. One commentator observed concerning this verse, "Ah, but one hopes to make the world a better place, or at least leave something for those who follow. The truth is that those that follow bring all your accomplishments back to square one. As for pinning our hopes on posterity, in the end, posterity will have lost the faintest memory of us." Just look at the history of the world. You see it. But that's life without God. Solomon diligently pursued also pleasure and wealth. In Ecclesiastes chapter 2 and verse 2, "I said of laughter, it is madness, and of mirth, what does it accomplish?" Now, what's he saying here? Well, he said he found that laughing was pointless. What, I mean, you can see right through it. It's madness. I think there's, yeah, madness is something that is defined by seeing right through it. Yeah, that's right. That's what it says. Yeah. How about that? But lightheartedness, the definition of mirth, he says it doesn't accomplish anything. But Ecclesiastes 2 verse 3 says, I searched in my heart how to lay hold on folly till I might see what was good for the sons of men to do under heaven all the days of their lives. Or just in case reason might be blocking the way, he deliberately acted irrationally in attempt to find the secret of life. In this pursuit, he also became a connoisseur. In Ecclesiastes 2 and verse 3, I searched in my heart how to gratify my flesh with wine, while guiding my heart with wisdom. Now, the word gratify is translated give in the King James, and to stimulate my body in the New American Standard. Somehow, he wanted to give pleasure to his body while still exercising wisdom. Now, I want you to note that this is the same man, the same man who wrote Proverbs 20 and verse 1. Now, why is that significant? Because Proverbs 20 and verse 1 says, wine is a mocker, intoxicating drink arouses brawling, and whoever is led astray by it is not wise. Also, in Proverbs chapter 23, the same man in Proverbs 23 verses 31 and 32 says, do not look on the wine when it is red, when it sparkles in the cup, when it swirls around smoothly. At the last, it bites like a serpent and stings like a viper. Now, what did he find out about it? Well, quite simply, he found out that wisdom and wine don't mix. Wisdom and wine don't mix. Simple as that. But he also tried creativity. In Ecclesiastes 2, beginning with verse 4, I made my works great. I built myself houses and planted myself vineyards. I made myself gardens and orchards, and I planted all kinds of fruit trees in them. I made myself water pools from which to water the growing trees of the grove. I acquired male and female servants and had servants born in my house. Yes, I had greater possessions of herds and flocks than all who were in Jerusalem before me. We find out in 1 Kings 7, that it took 13 years to build his dream house. 13 years. But what do we see? Well, he tried possessions. And Ecclesiastes 2 and verse 8 says, I also gathered for myself silver and gold and the special treasure of kings of the province. He got all the riches that he wanted. And he also engaged in the entertainment and the culture of the time. In Ecclesiastes 2 and verse 8, I acquired male, female, and delights of the sons of men, and musical instruments of all kinds. And of course, we all know that he also sought fulfillment in women. The New American Standard renders Ecclesiastes 2 and verse 8, I provided myself male and female singers, the pleasures of men, many concubines. And this is in keeping with what we know about the life of Solomon. But we also know that such women caused his ultimate downfall too. Solomon's search was thorough. As we noted in Ecclesiastes 2:10, whatever my eyes desired, I did not keep from them. I did not withhold my heart from any pleasure. For my heart rejoiced in all my labor, and this was my reward from all of my labor. What did he find? What was the ultimate? Well, his assessment of all of these things is in Ecclesiastes 2 and verse 11. I looked on all the works of my hands had done, on the labor which I had toiled, and indeed all was vanity and grasping for the wind. There was no profit under the sun. You know, some say a thing of beauty is a joy forever. But Solomon found out that this was not true. All that he did, all that he acquired, produced no lasting satisfaction. In Ecclesiastes 2 and verse 12, the next verse, then I turned myself to consider wisdom and madness and folly. For what can the man do who succeeds the king? Only what he has already done. Now, I'm going to give you a little hint. Come 2 o'clock online, you're going to see part two of this lesson. Because there's more. But I want you to consider this. I want you to consider the question, is God at the center of your life? Now, I don't mean, do you think about God now and then, or do you think about God a couple hours a week? I want to know, is God the center of your life? Is he considered in everything you say and do? Is he, in fact, at the top of your list of priorities? Well, if not, everything you do is vanity and grasping for the wind. Even if you were as wise as Solomon, leaving God out of your plans for your life will result in futility. Why not put God where he belongs, at the top of your list of priorities? Make serving God the most important thing in your life. And you know what'll happen? You won't be saying vanity of vanities. No. You know what you'll be saying? You'll be saying, hey, everything else has fallen into place. Everything else has fallen into place. Why? Because God is at the top of my list of priorities. I put God where He belongs. Each one of us remembered God belongs at the top of our list. Not somewhere on the list, but at the top. And we're going to have some more to say about that this afternoon.